Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today, once again, I've got John Galloway, who was my first guest in 2010, we just figured out. And he is a program manager on what, John?
The .NET community team.
And we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff. So where are you spending most of your time?
Well, I'm balancing a few different things. So I work with experience for .NET on a Mac. I work with the all of our live streaming shows. So we kind of scaled up from, especially during due to like lack of travel and stuff, we've scaled up to a lot more live TV shows. So we launched this .NET live TV thing. And so that's got live streaming shows every day of the week now. And so I kind of helped set up the infrastructure and figure out how we could do that. Yeah. And then some other stuff I've been doing lately is helping coordinate. We're focusing on some like themes. So like last month was APIs, and this month we're doing microservices. And it's not like it's more of an internal thing where we kind of look at, hey, if I was new to microservices and I just Googled .NET microservices, what would I find? And, you know, we kind of bash through things and go like, whoa, this tutorial is out of date. And these two things argue with each other. And this, you know, learn module could be more clear. And so, yeah, so I kind of help work with that stuff.
And this daily television show.
Yeah.
Is that across all the different topics?
Yes. .NET? So it's .NET Live TV. And if you go to live.net, so it's live.net. I don't know if that makes sense, but you know, yes. Live period dot period net. And I'm looking right now. I don't think we have anyone on at the second, but we generally have people on, like we had a show this morning. So it includes, the .NET Docs team has a show. We have the .NET community stand-up Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. We have Mads Christensen on writing Visual Studio extensions. Jeff Fritz has a C-sharp show. We have just all kinds of stuff. So, and then for the .NET community stand-up, that's actually where it started. We started with the ASP.NET community stand-up on Tuesdays. And then I worked with James to scale that out to cover Tuesday, Thursday show. And then we had more people that wanted to, you know, do specific shows. And so we added on Wednesdays as well. So it includes, there's a Visual Studio tooling. There's a, just tooling for .NET in general. There's data entity framework team. There's
what about mobile?
There's a mobile show. Yep. And which is always really good. Those are some of our most attended ones. We have machine learning. We have, .NET, like languages and runtime. Just all the stuff. It's pretty cool. And it's been great to see it grow. I just saw today we hit 100,000 subscribers on YouTube for .NET. And we broadcast
it's almost
out
as many as I have in this podcast.
And we broadcast out to YouTube and Twitch and Facebook, and we even do the ASP.NET on Twitter and stuff. So part of the challenge with it was, as we had more people joining into this, was how to actually, like, we had them get set up with OBS and like have to kind of become experts on live streaming and stuff. And then we ended up trying out some more hosted solutions, and we use one called StreamYard. And it's browser-based. Like right now we're talking using Zencastr, and StreamYard is a very similar experience for live streaming. And so people share their desktops, share their webcams and everything, and they just go. And it's, we had like one show where I was the host and my computer blue screened and the show just kept going. Yeah, but nothing dropped because it's all cloud-based. And then once my computer came back up, I just joined the stream and kept right going. So that's kind of fun. Well, we do have a decent amount of automation stuff that we have to do with that to make sure we have guests scheduled and things. And so we started using Microsoft Planner, which is kind of like a Trello sort of experience. Mm-hmm. And that was fine, but then it ended up, we were like going in and saying, wow, this person doesn't have their show, their guests scheduled, and the show's in 2 days and stuff. And so we're sending all these emails. So I worked with James and we did all this automation using, it's now called Power Automate. It used to be called Microsoft Flow. And it's this kind of like you hook boxes together, similar to if you've used Logic apps before with Azure or whatever. So it's awesome what you can build. And it's also sometimes frustrating because you'll be like, oh, I have to nest these three if blocks to just do this one thing, you know, but it's pretty amazing once you get it all hooked up and it ties into everything, you know? So we're hooking into Planner and Azure DevOps and sending emails and sending Teams things and updating Planner boards and stuff. So I don't know. Yeah.
Before we started, you said that you were doing some stuff with Azure DevOps.
Yeah.
And you talk a little bit about what's the scope of Azure DevOps? How much does that include?
Azure DevOps does a lot of stuff, and I'm not an expert at all. When I first approached Azure DevOps, I thought of it as repositories and automated builds. And it definitely does that. And that's kind of a key value is that you can, you know, handle all the stuff, especially for like, if you've got, say, a private team, or if you know, like you want to have this, you know, managed infrastructure and produce, you know, packages that people can consume and all that kind of stuff. What I've been using it for a lot is work items. And so we'll set up these, you know, like work item boards or Azure DevOps boards, I believe it's called. And then you have work items and you have things can be assigned to sprints and all that. So it's all this kind of project planning stuff. What's kind of neat with it though, is you can really customize it quite a bit. And so for instance, for these like .NET monthly theme things, we've created like a custom video type that's a video, and it has like fields for like, what's the video URL and how many viewers and what date was it published and that sort of stuff. And then I set up automation, and I actually like was sending out these weekly emails that had all these emojis and all this, you know, like stuff to make it interesting and skimmable. And I set that up using Power Automate so that it actually goes and pulls all the stuff and then looks at tags and does all this neat stuff and generates this nice HTML email or email. So
is Power Automate part of Azure or is that a separate
program? It's a separate thing. And I'm again at the edge of my expertise here. It's the Power Platform, I believe. And it is another part. It's related to like all the the cloud offerings from Microsoft, but it's a separate like portal and all that kind of stuff. And Power Platform includes Power Automate. And then there's also, it does a lot of different things. You can build a Power app, which makes it really easy to build something that's like a mobile friendly app. And if you think even back to the days of like Access development, you know, where like a business person could go in and they can basically get exposed to, here's the fields that, you know, there's a layer on top of it, but it's basically like, here's the fields that my API provides or that my database provides. And then you can drag and drop them and you can make forms and simple things. So it's, you know, kind of like a lightweight, I don't know, you can build it kind of a simple app on top of things. So, right. Yeah.
Yeah. We were using it for at the place I've just been working is a repository, but there were a lot of rules cooked into the way we were doing the pipeline. So you had to get a PR and you had to get approval, but it also had to pass a lot of gateway things.
Yeah.
Could only have so many warnings and couldn't increase the number of warnings and worked with SonarLint, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm.
SonarCube. Yeah. And a whole bunch of other kind of rules that were baked in to avoid polluting our main branch. Mm-hmm. It was pretty cool. And
yeah.
I think we probably just skimmed the surface.
It's pretty amazing. You know, like I work with different teams and that's always a nice thing. Like at Microsoft is I'll be trying to do something. I'll say, oh, I'll just contact the dev that did it or, you know, that kind of thing. But so like, you know, we've got some customizations on ours that are pretty neat and looking what other teams are building. We're kind of using it at a pretty simple level for some of this stuff, but it's neat to be able to build like a nice custom dashboard and figure out like, you know, it's a lot of the time it feels like you have to figure out how does it want me to work and then you'll kind of get your thing done. But yeah.
So I gotta tell you, I think Microsoft missed an opportunity. We went
just one
again. Just one.
One opportunity.
We were trying. We've been trying to get through to register for a COVID vaccine, and every single place has a different system, and they're all terrible, and they also crash all the time.
Yep.
And if Microsoft had come out and said, "We're going to run this on Azure, so you get 100% reliability, and we're going to use, you know, ASP and blah blah blah, these different things that you want to show off," and built a, you know, beautiful, easy to use, smart, reliable system, and just, you know, given it away to the country, I think it would have just been $1 million worth of publicity.
I can't argue with you. I think I've seen some things where it was like so-and-so, whatever state or municipality or whatever, is using this Microsoft solution. But you're right. Just having like a general, hey, here's a free thing that everyone can use sounds neat.
Massachusetts, it's been just awful.
It reminds me of the wonderful piece together systems that my kids are using for school, and which is especially more obvious to me with the homeschooling. It's like, you know, they'll use one system for parent notifications, but a different system for grades and a different for assignments. And each teacher uses their own, you know, content system. And it's like trying to help my middle schooler with her, you know, her classes and check and make sure she's done all her homework is not easy.
Yes. Yes. So. Well, I don't want to bang on the COVID thing, but my last feeling about this is they knew it was coming. I mean, they had a year in which everybody knew the vaccine was coming, and there was plenty of time to get this right, which such is life. But that's not to say Microsoft doesn't get a whole lot of things right. They hired me and you.
There you go. Got that thing.
How long have you been at Microsoft?
I think I just hit 11 years in November or December.
Wow.
So, yeah,
that's been a long while. Yeah, I would say 5 years, which is the longest I've ever been anywhere.
Wow.
So,
yep.
So yeah, I liked it. But they work you hard.
They do work you hard. You always feel like you're behind on something. And you know, you're always working with people that are getting a ton of stuff done and like coming up with great ideas. And then it's infectious. And then, you know, I'll think, oh, we could also do this. And then I just signed myself up to do that thing. You know, it's like, why did I say that?
So you're working also with BS Mac.
Yeah. So the whole kind of .NET on Mac in general, and, you know, like we're continually improving things, including like making it so you don't have to use VS for Mac to do .NET dev. But really that's our, you know, that's supposed to be the premier experience. If you're doing .NET development on a Mac, we recommend Visual Studio for Mac. And that's going to give you, you know, you could do it command line in any editor of your choice. But VS for Mac gives you like the file new project templates, and it gives you the, you know, like integrated debugging and all that kind of stuff, scaffolding and, you know, those sorts of things like are built in. So, you know, some of the main areas we focus on, there's, you know, of course, traditionally it was started from Xamarin, and so the Xamarin experience is definitely a focus. And then some other things we look at, like there's Visual Studio tools for Unity are, and just the Unity tooling is there's a lot of people using that. And then kind of one of the hugest areas is web dev. So especially like API development with other front ends and just, you know, any kind of ASP.NET core dev. So, and then one of the things that we've kind of launched over the past year has been Blazor support also. So that's, that includes your Blazor server. And then, towards the end of last year, we included full Blazor WebAssembly support too.
So. Tell me about Blazor. Tell me where it's used and what it's grown into.
Yeah, well, Blazor is pretty neat. So it is a way for building single page applications. So if you think of something that you could also, you know, similar to like React or Angular, this is something where you can build that using all C#. So you can use C# instead of JavaScript. And the reason you can do that, and without it being gross and non-webby and all that, is that it works with WebAssembly. And WebAssembly is browser standard. And it's basically like it's a browser standard way of writing something that is a binary that's executed in the browser. And so, you know, it gives you the option. I think there's a sweet spot for if you are mostly a .NET developer, you're okay with JavaScript, but it's not the thing that you're best at, and you just want to get an app written, And also, you don't want to rewrite things. So like I've so many times written the same model class in JavaScript and C Sharp because I need, you know, I needed to do something. My API was in C Sharp on the server, and then my client code in JavaScript needed to also communicate with it. I'm constantly keeping models, you know, in sync, and I'm rewriting the same logic and stuff. So with Blazor, the idea is you write that logic in C Sharp, and it works anywhere your C Sharp stuff works. So that's, I think that's pretty interesting. It's something that, you know, they're developing based on how customers are using it. One thing that's really kind of taken off with it is the whole kind of component model to it. And that's something where we've kind of missed that in the ASP.NET world since WebForms, you know, did not make the move to ASP.NET Core. Mm-hmm. So, you know, WebForms, there's definitely a lot of ways to shoot yourself in the foot with it, but it's also incredibly productive. You drag controls on and then you double click and you set properties and you write event code. And it's like, you know, you can wire up so much stuff, including like, here's a grid, here's a form, here's some buttons that update the, you know, the grid from the form and that sort of stuff. You can do it just blazing fast. So with, you know, we've seen that component-based development has become a pretty web standard way of doing web dev for single page app stuff. So that includes like Angular, definitely React. You know, even people are always using like Bootstrap classes to basically cobble together components. And so the idea here is that Blazor, the Blazor team looked at what are the top ways that people are building these components and kind of took the best of what they saw from that. So it's a way of writing components, but then we've learned our lessons from, you know, here's how they were hard to maintain. Here's how they fell apart with web forms, and here's how we can build them the right way. But it enables like, you know, it's a clear migration path for like a web forms developer or web forms dev shop. And it's also, it makes it easy for component vendors, you know, Telerik and, you know, Component One and just all the component vendors to start making for sale components. So that's also pretty cool. So, you know, especially for like an internal enterprise, you know, dev shop that wants to get a lot of stuff done and, you know, has that sort of component based dev experience, this is a pretty sweet spot. So
what happens with TypeScript in all of this?
It is web standard. And so you can use JavaScript and TypeScript with Blazor, but you don't have to. So the mm-hmm. idea with this is you write your Blazor is basically like you write Razor view code, and then you write a code block, and that's just C sharp, and it just that's all you need. So you could use TypeScript, but it's really kind of you don't need to in this case. You just write C sharp. Well, so it's interesting. It's definitely, you know, kind of new. One of the ones that I am most familiar with is I mentioned earlier that .NET Live TV where we're streaming these live shows, and we have on the .NET website. So it's live.dot.dot.net. And it is that's a site that James Montemagno built. I've contributed to it, and it lists all the you know upcoming shows, and it has some cool logic to help like toggle as shows are coming, you know, upcoming shows and previous shows and all that kind of stuff. So that's, you know, we always try and use our own stuff, dog food our own stuff at Microsoft, and so that is one I'm very familiar with. We had an interesting ASP.NET community stand up, and we talked to some developers that were working on an open source component library for Blazor, and both of them shared that they're using it for smaller, you know, startup type applications. One was using it for a medical management system, and another was using it for a real estate system. So, you know, it's interesting. Both of them said, these are applications I could not have built without Blazor. Like I just didn't have the time to go and put together a single page app front end and this back end. I didn't want to be managing the medical security implications and all these sorts of things, scheduling for doctors and that sort of stuff, and worry about, you know, something that I didn't totally deeply understand. And I'm a .NET developer, and this just totally worked out for me. So those are some examples that come to mind for me. Always, you know, happy to hear about other ones. And, you know, there's some neat ones that come across, but those are some big ones that jump out at me.
I want to go back to, if you don't mind, go back to Visual Studio Mac. And we talked, you talked a little bit about its history, but where is it at this point in terms of functionality compared with Visual Studio Windows?
Yeah, it's there's some areas where, you know, Visual Studio for Windows goes way back to like before .NET, right? And it's a beast of a product. It's an amazing product, but it does all kinds of stuff, including development, a lot of different languages, C++, and all kinds of different stuff. It also has some things that we're never going to have on Mac, like, you know, web forms and Windows forms and different sorts of, you know, support. So we really try to focus on those core, I guess, pardon the pun, but those core .NET scenarios, the things that we really, you know, we want to be the premier .NET developer experience. And so, you know, those areas are the places where you're going to see it's going to feel the most familiar. And that's actually been an area where we've focused on over the past year, is moving in two directions that almost seem they're different, but they all are the same. One is we've moved towards native Mac. The product used to be built with GTK in order to support Linux and Windows as well. And we're focusing on moving the UI components to native Mac experience. And at the same time, we're also working to share as much code as we can. So for instance, in our latest release, we do releases the same day always that Visual Studio for Windows ships. And so our latest release was Visual Studio for Mac 8.9, and it shipped the same day as Visual Studio for Windows 16.9 shipped. So I think that was March 2nd or 3rd. And so one of those things was migrating the XML editor to use the exact same editor that Visual Studio for Windows uses. So I guess that's kind of a long roundabout thing to say, you know, those .NET developer experiences, especially like ASP.NET Core, you know, any kind of APIs, Blazor, et cetera, stuff, building class libraries, all those sorts of things. And then looking forward, also moving towards, you know, supporting the .NET MAUI. So there's Xamarin Forms, and then looking forward, we're going to have .NET MAUI, which brings across that cross-platform, you know, UI experience everywhere. And that's something that, you know, that's where VS Max can also light up there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of the things I want to start playing with is .NET Core 6 and MAUI, because some of the early bits are now available. And does it make sense to do that on a Mac?
Well, yeah, especially because if you run into anything, you can let me know and we'll get it fixed.
Great.
So the idea is really kind of building from Xamarin Forms and then expanding to, you know, like you can use it to build other, like if you think of where you would go with your desktop applications. So .NET 6 is, you know, it's still early. They just shipped .NET 6 Preview 2. However, that is that's a core priority. So we include .NET 6 preview support in Visual Studio for Mac. So that's, you're right, it's .NET 6. And I always have to police myself on the, it is a little, I mean, hopefully we always try to keep things as simple as possible. And I realize a name change also brings in some complication, but we had people get confused where they legitimately had CIOs, you know, they'd say, hey, we'd like to do this project in .NET Core 3.1. And the CIO would say, well, there's .NET Framework is at version 4.8 and .NET Core is at version 3.1. So let's use the higher version number and we're going to use .NET Framework. And also the people were always like, when's the next version of .NET Framework coming out? And some confusion about, hey, what's the direction of .NET? And so really to make it completely clear, there's one single .NET and it's .NET 5 and then .NET 6 and .NET 7. They ship every November and this is, you know, this is the future.